My name is Chris Garcia.
And I'm Rhonda Solis.
And we're Latino Northern Colorado. Today, we are so excited to be on location at the Greeley History Museum as they prepare to launch their upcoming exhibit, Bittersweet Harvest, the Bracero Program 1942 to 1964. For those of you who don't know, Braceros were guest laborers brought to the United States during and after World War II to work short-term labor contracts. The Bracero program invited approximately 2 million Mexicans to enter the United States and work, impacting the existing and future political, economic, and social climates of both the United States and Mexico. Bittersweet Harvest, the Bracero program 1942 to 1964, is a Smithsonian traveling exhibition featuring educational bilingual posters that examine the largest Mexican guest worker program in U.S. history. The exhibit opens at the Greeley History Museum on Thursday, May 5th, and is part of the 36th annual Cinco de Mayo Greeley Festival Celebrations, which returns on Saturday, May 7th to downtown Greeley on 9th Street and 8th Avenue. Today, Rhonda and I have the pleasure of interviewing Holly Berg and Adriana Trujillo of the Greeley History Museum. Welcome, we're so excited to have the opportunity to host you.
Thanks, it's great to be here. You did a great summary of the program. I think our work here is done. I don't need to hear anything else from us, right?
We have questions.
Okay.
All right, let's get right into the interview. Can you tell us more about this project and what made you interested in this specific part of U.S. and Mexican history and what its significance is to Colorado?
Absolutely, great question. So I guess it all starts with how we plan our exhibits, which exhibits we're going to have, and when and why they come here. So when we're planning the exhibits, we tend to host two different kinds here at the Greeley History Museum, and that's in-house exhibits and traveling exhibits. So the in-house exhibits are kind of exactly what they sound like, from topic selection to research, writing, artifact selection, design, fabrication, installation, maintenance, we do it all. All in-house, just Adriana and me as the exhibits team. So the other flip side to that is traveling exhibits. Those are displays that get put together by a different institution or organization, and then they get sent to us, and we put them up. But it's not as simple as it sounds. With every traveling exhibit, we like to add our own local content because we are very mission-driven, and our mission states that we interpret Greeley and Weld County. So we like to add our own local flavor and stories to every traveling exhibit we bring in. So this is one of those. And it came to us from SITES, the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Services. It's a mouthful, I know. So we tend to plan our exhibits schedule out in an ideal world about 3 to 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's quite a while. Of course, COVID threw a huge wrench into our schedules, and we're still trying to play catch up. But when we stumbled across this exhibit listed on the SITES portal, the Smithsonian portal, we got really excited, actually, because these posters are based on a larger traveling exhibit that ended its run, actually, a few years ago. It had been traveling for a long time, and several other institutions in Colorado had hosted it, but not the Greeley History Museum. So we were excited to find that these posters were still available to us. And we don't make unilateral decisions about which exhibits come. We have an entire board and staff team called the Experience Team that we run everything by. And they were really excited when we presented this exhibit as well, because it's telling a new chapter that we haven't gotten to tell yet here in the museum system. We tell a lot about the Spanish colony and Great Western Sugar Company recruiting laborers and encouraging them to become year-round-ish residents, and then how they built the adobe houses, and that all happened right around the 1920s. And we kind of talk about that, and then we leave it off. So this exhibit allows us to move forward in the timeline and tell more of that story around the World War II time frame. And then on the flip side, also, this allows us a really awesome opportunity to do more of what we're trying to do more of, which is work with more and more different community groups. So this one, a relatively new group just formed called the Mexican American History Project. And they happened to meet right here in this room, and we were lucky enough to be invited to one of those meetings, and so we told them about this exhibit that we wanted to bring in. And they got really excited as well, and they committed to becoming our co-curators for this exhibit. So it's not only us putting this together, there's a local community group that has been integral to creating this exhibit every step of the way, which has been awesome. And it's allowed us to take a national story and make it local and bring that local view to it. Because, of course, Colorado was one of the 34 states that the braceros were assigned to work.
That's just very exciting, just knowing that, like, it moves forward in the timeline. I think that so often it's like, you were here, right? Like, this is where you contributed, and that's it, right? But, like, really knowing that, like, this Greeley History Museum, along with the Mexican American History Project, are working together to really highlight that continuous work of Latinos and specifically of Mexicanos in this area is very exciting to me. Do either of you have a connection to the history of braceros? And if so, what does bringing this exhibit to Greeley mean to you?
Specifically, my family history is very connected to the bracero program. My grandfather, who just recently passed away a year ago, which I would have loved for him to see this exhibit.
Goodness.
This is kind of a homage to him, and a few of his like clothes and tools that he used in the field are in the exhibit.
Wow!
That's beautiful.
That's powerful.
He was about 17 years old when he came from Mexico to the U.S. while he applied to be a part of the Bracero program. And he was in it from 1961 to 1964, so the end of the Bracero program. And he was working in California. And because he liked the work that was being offered here in the United States, he decided to bring his family over. And that was 9 children and his wife, and they came over here, started a whole new life, and created a lot of opportunities for his kids and grandkids. And so it's very close to home, this exhibit.
Can I ask follow-up questions?
Of course.
Where did your family come from in Mexico, and then how did the journey bring y'all from California to Colorado?
Oh, okay. So, my grandpa and that would be my mom's side of the family, they're from Tepatitlán, Jalisco. The other side of my family, my dad's side, is from Chihuahua. So a little bit of a difference. But a lot of the braceros were placed in specific states. They didn't really get a preference. So he was placed in California, and he worked there for 3 years. And since the season is all year long, he practically stayed here for 3 years. And they came to Colorado because, actually, my grandpa didn't really like California for some reason. And it's interesting because a lot of my uncles say, he should have stayed in California. I would have loved to grown up in California. But apparently a lot of friends that he knew from the same area in Jalisco had been talking about Colorado and about the agricultural communities and the opportunities here for agricultural workers. And they just talked about like the climate and the different types of communities that were here, and that slowly but surely more Hispanic communities were being created. And he just thought, you know, that would be nice to stay around people that you kind of know. And he said that he didn't really feel like he created a community in California from one of the interviews that I had read. And so that's why he chose Colorado. And from the times that I had talked to him years ago, he really likes Colorado. He really likes it. surprisingly, even though it snows and it's a lot colder than Mexico.
Yeah, that snow thing.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because he gets a little bit of a break from the working season.
That could be too.
But he's also a workaholic. He loved to spend time in the field, and anytime he wasn't in the field, he was prepping for it, you know, getting bags ready, tags, and the tools, and just, yeah, he really loved the work that he did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So we were fortunate enough to just take a little glimpse of the beginning of it. And I mean, that was even emotional just to get that glimpse. So I can't even imagine what that's going to be like for you to kind of go through the whole thing once it's all done.
Yeah.
That's going to be, yeah, very emotional.
Just thinking about it.
I know, right? I know. Okay, so let's stop that. So what hopes do you have for this exhibit and the history that it brings to Greeley and to Northern Colorado communities?
So unfortunately, a lot of people don't really know about the history of the Bracero program, and it's a great way not only to teach people and shed light on a history that is not really talked about, but it also creates an inclusive space for Mexican Americans, or, you know, Latinos in general, because it's publicizing the importance of the diverse history that has created what the United States is now. So it's really powerful. It's, you know, one step in the right direction. We're not there where we want to be, but it's definitely a great way to shed light on things that have been either kept quiet or just not really talked about in, like, in education.
Classrooms.
And, yeah.
You know, what's really cool about this, too, in my opinion, as a fellow Mexicano, Mexican-American, is that, like, seeing an exhibit like this come to the city of Greeley and seeing monuments being built in Fort Collins, like The Hand That Feeds, really just highlight the work that Latinos did, and specifically Mexicans, right? Like, because those are the populations that came here first, did in order to build these communities. And I feel like so often those histories are hidden, right? And those histories are marginalized, and those histories are minoritized, and those histories are just kind of put in a shed and said, like, that happened, but we're not going to talk about that. It's the rest of us that did this work, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, like, it's so important for us to see those things and really kind of just highlight Greeley wouldn't be Greeley without the folks who work at JBS, without the folks who work the agricultural fields, without the folks that, knowing that Budweiser would not exist in Fort Collins only because they were looking for a population of larger Hispanic Latino influence, right? Like, these communities, these businesses, this growth happened because folks like us were here. And so, like, I find it very powerful.
Yeah.
Well, and definitely. Not only that, I mean, I'm in that leadership Northern Colorado, and we're talking about, you know, us being so rich in agriculture and, you know, the amount of energy that we produce and the amount of food that we produce. And you still don't hear in that conversation the people that do those jobs, the people that have done that work for decades. And that is such a part of the story. And I think the other thing for me growing up was, once you learn these stories of the people that did this work and how hard they worked and what their life was like, it gives you a different sense of, they did that for me. I'm in this space because of them. And how do I pass that forward? So it's almost a responsibility that you end up getting, because you hear it wasn't always like this, and that there were people that did this work and, you know, broke glass ceilings and showed up and fought the fights before I was even thought of. And because of that, I get to do things like this, like a podcast. And so I think that's really important. Like what you were saying, we need to have these stories in classrooms because they need to know what wonderful roots they come from. People that look just like them, that have contributed and have been part of history, and that they should be proud and hold their heads up high. And gives them that feeling of, I belong here. We've been here a long time. And so to continue that and to really take that seriously.
And we weren't just standing around.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I think one of the workers. Yeah. I think one of the most poignant facts that stood out to me is that this exhibit is not only about acknowledging everything they went through, but it's about celebrating it, absolutely. And one of the facts that will stick in my mind is that for decades, Weld County was listed in the top 10 agricultural producing counties in the nation. Not many outside of California are on that list, but that we would not have been able to produce that much without the braceros and the other migrant laborers. Mm-hmm. And we're still in that top 10 list many, many times. And we still have the workers, the migrant laborers, we still have immigrant labor,
right? Like, we still have all of those things. I think this is like a great segue to our next question, but also something that, you know, in just being able to go see it for that little snippet and see that first part of it go up, one of the things that I shared with everyone in the room is that Nazi Germany gained a lot of the techniques and tactics that it had during the Holocaust from the border between Mexico and the United States. And so one of the things that we had a question about was, what did you learn from this exhibit that you may not have known prior to bringing Bittersweet Harvest to the Greeley History Museum?
So I think for me, I mean, there were so many things that stood out, because even I didn't know much about the program before putting this exhibit together. And many of my colleagues that I talked about, this is the first time they're hearing about a lot of those details as well. But I think the first thing, or the most poignant thing that stood out to me, is just how many of the things that the braceros were promised in their contracts that were completely ignored or broken. And in any, you know, government program, you're going to expect a little bit of that, but just the true depth of broken promises and the fact that there is still activism and work going on today to try to repair some of those broken promises. And many of the workers are probably gone now and never experienced any of that.
I think broken promises is like the history of the United States, right?
Native
and Indigenous folks, to Black and African American communities, to so many folks, that is the history of the United States. And
yeah, there are a lot of the activism I was talking about, like, they were promised fair wages and never given fair wages, and a lot of the activism is around trying to get those people their earned wages, not even extra money, just their plain earned wages. But that's only the tip of the iceberg of the promises that they were guaranteed.
And Adriana, that question to you is going to be interesting, because you've heard stories from your grandfather. And so to hear those stories and then kind of learn this history, was there anything in looking at the stuff from the museum that you didn't know about, or that maybe your grandfather didn't mention or talk about?
Yeah, well, actually, I delved deeper into my family history because of this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like it's never ending, my family history, which is amazing. You know, talking about the political aspect and the historical connection between Mexico and the United States with Holly, when we were getting this exhibit put together, I would go to my grandma's, which she lives 2 minutes away from here, which is amazing. Almost every other day I would talk to her and say, okay, tell me more. Like, what kind of conditions did grandpa live in? And how much did he get paid? And what kind of tools did they use? And I had no idea that they were forced to use these short-handled tools, because if they didn't stand up in between harvesting the you know, beets or the onions or potatoes, then they would save time, not them, but the owners would save time on the harvest. And so he literally would break his back throughout, I don't know, it was the 60s and 70s, and then during the 80s, they started to allow them to use
it still existed. My mom went through it.
Yeah, I mean, the tools that I brought,
yeah,
that those were the tools, the short handle.
That's what the hand that feeds is.
Yes, exactly. And so I learned a lot about like what he went through and the more specific details of his life and how my family, I mean, my family is still working in the fields too. We're an agricultural family. We still work in the fields in the summers, and it's interesting to see how things have changed and just how much my grandpa worked. Sorry, I'm getting emotional
can
now.
Can I ask this like follow up? Just yes. Like, and feel free to cry if you need to, but like, when I hear that you're talking to your grandma, I see her like making tortillas while she's talking to you, or like pouring you a bowl of frijoles, or you know, is like, was that like the experience? Did she like feed you? Right? Because like that's part of like community as well. It's like,
mija,
estás muy flaca, you know, like.
Yes, tienes que comer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
¿Has comido?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I mean. That is her. Every time I go over, she's like, I need food. I have their frijoles. And even, which is difficult in a Mexican family, I'm vegan. But no, it doesn't matter. She's like, tengo arroz, tengo frijoles. So, yeah. Do you want vegetables? I got everything.
She's like, you're going to eat. You're not leaving this house.
I will make you something. So it's, yeah. I mean, we're sitting... Usually we sit outside of her front porch and just talk outside. Because, you know, that's usually what you do when you're talking to family. You grab chairs, you're like in a little circle, and you're just talking and just enjoying the environment around. And that's very nostalgic, because that's what we did growing up. We just sit outside of her house and just talk. And then whenever she would talk about a specific story, she's like, oh, I have pictures. Come inside.
Oh, cool.
And so we would go inside, and she's like, wait, I have
I
newspapers from... Yes, albums. Yeah, she'd bring out albums, and of course, little pictures of saints are always in there.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know this one was there. That's where you were.
She's like, oh, shoot.
I'm going to go in a whole other direction.
Exactly, yes. But, yeah, it's like... We connect even more with the history, and we go on tangents about, you know, oh, this family member, and she talks about how they lived, and oh, I didn't tell you about this story, and it's like a full-on evening session of talking about our family, and every time I go and talk to her, it's always something new.
I would definitely suggest recording your conversations.
We talked about
yeah, those are so powerful. Yeah. I mean, and I think there's a lot of us that have lost our grandparents. It's like, I wish I would have done that, because there's so many stories and things that they talked about when you were little, like you didn't pay much attention to, and now it's like, oh, now I know what they're talking about, and I wish I could have that conversation. So definitely record.
Oh my gosh, I loved you coming into work the day after you spent time with your grandmother, because you would show up with all this stuff and all the newspapers, and then you'd sit down and be like, oh my gosh, look what I learned. And you'd share it with me, and that was awesome. I loved that. I don't get much of that personal connection to my exhibit subject. So
it's like
this was
now
awesome.
We're going to have to go through this museum with you. Like, I almost feel like we have to experience this with you.
Yeah.
So we don't often, you know, have exhibits or informational monuments that highlight Latino contributions in Northern Colorado. How long will this exhibit stay at the museum?
Yeah, absolutely. This one is scheduled to stay up through mid-March of 2023. So
nice.
A good long
nice
run.
Yeah.
A good long run. And then in addition, we're also planning some exhibit-related events to come throughout the duration while it's open. But we don't quite have details finalized yet, so... Those will be on the website when we do.
That's really cool. You know, I often get like reached out to by folks in the local school district asking like, where can we take students? You know, they have the History of the Southwest Mexican American Studies course. They're like, where can we take our students in Northern Colorado? Because Denver often feels so far away, right? Because even though the art museum has like Malinche right now and like all these different exhibits, or History Colorado has Chicano, you know, like it feels so far away. And, you know, oftentimes I'm like, well, they have the Tres Colonias Museum in Fort Collins, or now the Hand That Feeds is over there, right? And so I'm like, I try to, like, give them options. But, like, this is so exciting, because to know that this type of exhibit is in northern Colorado, and it's in Greeley specifically, and 72% of our school age population is Hispanic Latino, and 40+% of our population is Hispanic Latino Latinx identifying. And to know that like there are options for folks to also have like less expensive tickets and we're gonna share the ticketing information online. Thank you, Rhonda, for reminding us to do that. But like those are things that are very exciting because it allows folks to see again those contributions of their own history and themselves, and then at the same time an opportunity for education for like real life educators, teachers, principals to not only bring their students but also understand that history themselves. I think oftentimes we have this bias of like, I know what happened here, right? And really the opportunity to like lean in yourself and then really be like, oh, I didn't know this, or this is something new, or here's an example that I didn't hear about, and to see yourself reflected in those pieces really makes a difference for me.
Well, I think the other aspect of that is, especially for Latinos, we're very proud, and there's not a lot of complaints. It's hard work, you did it, and you just didn't complain about it. So I'm sure to learn the other view of what that might have looked like for your grandfather, where he may not have had, told you those stories, it must really change like your feeling of his stories, because it's like he was so proud and he worked so hard and he'd put all his stuff together and he'd be excited to get ready. Mm-hmm. And there was this part of the program where they, had empty promises and were treated in a certain way that maybe he didn't talk about, but he experienced.
Yeah, even like these past, 10 years that I remember of him working in the field and telling us how it was, that's the one thing that I really remember about him is that he never complained. He never complained. And oh my gosh, he had so many problems, like his back, he was very old and just withering away, and he was like always ready to get in the field at like 5 a.m, and he would come home and he barely ate anything. We had to force feed him, but he always just told us how important work is and how important it is to work hard for what you want in life.
Yeah. That's our story. We see that over and over again.
I think this ties into like acts of assimilation that were kind of forced as well.
Yes.
Just because like Rhonda, you've shared this story that your mom and grandma didn't want to teach y'all Spanish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like that's one thing that having one parent that's from Mexico and the other one from the United States, like I have that privilege of being bilingual because it was like, vas a conocer el español y vas a hablar español porque necesitas a fuerzas, right?
Yeah.
And like, it was like, you are going to know both languages. It's going to help you in the future. But folks in the 40s, folks in the 50s, folks in the 60s, folks in the 70s were like, we get hit at school for doing these things. Like, we get in trouble for speaking Spanish. Even at UNC, I have a cousin who works on the facilities team, and she was like, we were told by someone that like we can't speak Spanish to each other, and I was like, lies. Let's jack some shit up, right? Like, and like Advocate Chris came out, and so like I think that like it ties into not only like this pride point and these like you put your head down and you work hard and all of these different things, but it ties into this like really troublesome history that exists not only in the past, but now with our relationship with ourselves, with our identity. When we don't see ourselves reflected in the classroom, when we don't see ourselves reflected in local government, right? Like there's this like this back and forth of like American dream, individualism, but also collective society and being together and wanting the community to be greater, and then people not understand, right? Like, there's all of these different things that tie into these experiences, and that's why, again, I think having something like this is so powerful, and leaning into that, knowing the contributions of Hispanic, Latino, and Latinx identifying individuals and what they've had on our state, specifically individuals like Casimiro Varela, who co-wrote the Colorado Constitution, Teresita Sandoval, who was one of the founders of Trinidad, Colorado, right? Rodolfo Corky Gonzalez, or even Polly Baca of Greeley, just to name a few folks, right? What other exhibits or historical information are you looking to bring to Greeley, to this history museum in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question, because this is not a one and done. Like you said, in the past, it's been a lot of, well, here, this is your contribution, and it's in a nutshell, and you don't get anything else.
And we check the box.
Yeah, exactly. That's not what we're interested in doing. So, like we mentioned before, this exhibit is scheduled to stay open through mid-March next year. And then, super exciting, in fall next year, we have a Smithsonian exhibit coming to us, a big exhibit coming to us about Dolores Huerta.
Yay!
That'll be super fun. And there's a big, good local story to tie in there, so that's going to be awesome. And then in 2024, we have another exhibit coming to us called Play Ball, and that has contributions from local residents Gabe and Jody Lopez about the Greeley Grays.
Yes.
So we're going to have so much fun
history.
Content.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah.
Well, when you bring the exhibit about Dolores Huerta, you have to include our podcast with her.
Just kidding, of course.
Because it's literally her with us and
yeah.
local ties to
Absolutely.
National, right? Like
yeah.
opportunities. So
mm-hmm. that's what we're all about.
And it's interesting to talk to someone like that, because you could talk about, again, how was it back then? How is it now? And what's different and what's not different?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that to get that perspective in somebody who's done that kind of activist work is huge. Along with, like, you know, your grandfather who did this work, to actually hear it from them is so powerful. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience that maybe you haven't we haven't discussed yet, or a question we haven't asked, or
that I can think of? You?
Well, going back to how we were talking about like the authorized heritage discourse, like what we are taught in schools to learn about. You know, it's the elitist groups. It's not about marginalized groups at all. So this belonging is not really there. But also learning about it, learning about histories of Latinos, African Americans, you know, and any marginalized group, indigenous groups, we're learning it through the for lack of better words, the colonial perspective,
mm-hmm.
the colonizer's perspective. And so the important thing that we've actually kept this in mind through the Bracero exhibit is the fact that we want people to learn about history through the people that lived it, through an emic perspective, through the insider's perspective, as opposed to the outsider's perspective, not looking at history through your cultural beliefs and values and views, looking at it through the person and the group and the community that lived through that historical narrative.
And we've definitely learned that stories, telling the stories, really changes minds. It
yes.
really opens up minds. It changes hearts. And it can really make a difference in a community. So
yeah.
again, on that perspective of, you know, making sure that these stories are told.
And that's what we like to think of ourselves as exhibit designers for the museums. We like to think of ourselves as storytellers.
Yeah.
Because that's what an exhibit is. And if it isn't, you're doing it wrong.
Well, thanks again for joining us on this episode of Latino Northern Colorado. We truly appreciate your time and the opportunity to engage with you as we share this exciting and unique exhibit that's coming to Greeley. Just thank you so much.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank
you all.
And I'm not kidding. We want to experience this with you. I feel like now we've bought in, and
yes.
then we're going to go to your grandma's house, and we're going to eat.
Yes.
It's going to be a whole experience.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And we're going to learn how to cut limes the right way.
Yes.
Well, thank you both. This has been an amazing conversation, and I look forward to upcoming conversations about other stuff that the museum brings.
Yes.
So follow our social media for additional updates and upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, everyone. And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. Talk to your family. Share some stories about your family if they were involved with the Braceros program. Let's connect online or in person. See you soon.
Bye.